Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining the Behind Company Lines podcast. Today we have Syed Hamid, founder and CEO at Sophy, a no-code automated mobile app testing platform. Syed, I'm so excited not only to chat with you as not only an engineer, but engineer and leader at a huge company, Microsoft, if you haven't heard of it, for decades from what it sounds like in terms of your experience and your career at building really exceptional software. And I'm sure I've had an opportunity to touch different types of features. And I'm always curious in your individuals like yourself and your background, your experience kind of coming from a big company and then starting a startup, because I think you come with a little bit of insight on what a mature company does. And then some of that translates over into the startup that you start building. And of course, no-code platforms and everything around no-code, I'm excited about because of the speed and efficiency and effectiveness that they're able to offer founders of any size, kind of that I would say full suite capability, but within one package. Before we get into Sophy and what you're working on, tell us a little bit about your experience at Microsoft. Tell us a little bit about not only what you learned there, but what are the internal mechanics of a large company like that as an engineering leader?
Julian, thank you very much for having me. It's really a pleasure meeting fellow entrepreneurs and also kind of people who are passionate about sharing this story, because I'm pretty sure there are future entrepreneurs who are listening to this podcast can learn as well. So a little bit about myself. I kind of started pretty much out of college at Microsoft, starting as a software testing engineer, basically testing different areas of the product. And grew through the ranks and became part of the leadership team, and that was responsible for all engineering productivity, which was basically developer tester activity and how this impacting the overall development life cycle. And if you remember, in the late 90s and 2000, the software cycle was in months and years, not in hours and days that we talk about and take it for granted. So therefore, the cost of releasing the product or finding issues after you have released the product is very significant. So I basically primarily worked on actually a lot of technologies. I started in MSN, Microsoft Network, way back when, with a narrowband competing with American Broadband, and work on compilers and languages as part of Dynamics 365 product line, a small business product. So across, like, I would say like 8-9 different product lines, and had the opportunity to work in Copenhagen as well for a few years when Microsoft has acquired a few companies. So over the years, I kind of managed teams in much every major presence where Microsoft had, like India, Russia, Copenhagen, and obviously US. So this kind of experience really helped me in three distinct ways. One is really managing the large engineering team and looking at the productivity, because the software companies like Microsoft is all about engineering productivity. How fast can you develop? How fast can you innovate? And all the blocking things that comes into in the way of releasing high quality products faster. So that's one aspect of it, like managing large team and understanding the engineering productivity. And the third thing is really kind of how do you release products at scale? As like a lot of products are in like 100 plus different languages, releasing world, and there are nuances and processes associated with it. So I had the opportunity to kind of work with some really, really smart people and was very fortunate to have some of the great managers that I had that really helped me grow and also helped me understand what I am passionate about.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about for those in the audience who don't know, but tell us a little bit about the testing process and where in line are the different, I guess, strategies around testing. And I think a lot of us maybe think about, if we're not working with engineering teams, about the development process and road mapping and maybe having a product vision. But the testing component of a lot of that software is so, I think, critical to its success or its ability to actually affect the consumer or the user that it's working with. Tell us about what's involved in that process of testing and why it's so important. And also, what essentially inspired you along that process to then build Sophy?
Yeah, great question. So if you kind of look at the software development life cycle, it's evolving quite fast. I think 20 years back, it was kind of months or years release. Now it's hours. So if how I see it, it's kind of a progression. So if you talk about in the 80s or even until mid 90s, people were testing primarily as manual testing it. Yeah, you'll get the product, you'll install it, you run through the X number of things, and then you release it. Then in 90s and 2000, with the Java IDE integrated development environment like Eclipse and Visual Studio, it comes the notion that you need to actually automate because, you know, you need to pass regression tests and you can't perform regression tests all the time manually. And that's why Mercury's of the world came into the picture. People start writing code to run the test. The last 5-7 years has been about no code because it's becoming very difficult to just understand all the elements on how to kind of effectively test. As an example, if you're just releasing an application, your process looks pretty cumbersome, right? You have to build, you have to understand the functional requirement. You need to understand which countries you are releasing it. You need to understand which locales are supported, which languages are supported, right?
Yeah.
And what are the requirements? Because as an example, in US, we may consider the 4G and LTE as default network setting. But in emerging countries or developing countries, it's maybe 2G is still, right? Yeah. So the network implication. So really the process is all about not testing itself. It's about releasing high quality product. And sometimes testing comes into the picture towards the latter end of the cycle, or sometimes it comes very early on, depending on the product you are building it. If you are very API centric, then you have to build early on very fast. But if you are kind of changing the UI frequently, then the approach may be different. So there is no one shoe that fits all. It's really about, you know, what makes your product quality and how you drive it across the software development lifecycle, from understanding the function requirement, creating the devs, executing it, and executing at a scale in hours, right? You can't afford to run everything all the time. And also equally understanding what to run and when to run.
Yeah. It's so fascinating thinking about the entire process and how it really helps deliver that high quality content or the high quality product. And tell us a little bit about Sophie. What is it allowing people to do now that they weren't allowed to before? I think you alluded to, you don't have to necessarily know every bit of component of the product lifecycle while building it. You can kind of utilize, is it a framework? Is it a type of code that interacts with other code and communicates with other languages? Is it restricted to a certain type of code? How does it plug in? How can I use it, say, if I'm building and testing applications?
Yeah. So before I kind of talk into the specifics, what Sophie does, let's talk about the problem space, right? Let's take as an example a day in a life of a test engineer or a developer, whoever is responsible for the quality of the product. So suppose you're building a particular application and I'm testing it. So what a day in my life looks like? Typically, I get a daily build either from TestFlight or any other CI/CD platform or thing. Then I install it on my application. That probably takes 15, 20 minutes or half an hour every day.
Yeah.
Then I actually go and test it on my own. I say, okay, how is it working? How is it, like, either if I'm doing it manually, but if I'm creating automation, then I need to use third-party tools like Appium or for performance and different tools to kind of just understand the functional performance, UI or visual quality of it. Then I execute it on a daily basis. Then I report runs. So if you look at the cycle of a developer, they spend 60 to 70% of their time doing repetitive tasks every day, every single day. And that's why the cost of testing is pretty high. So when we set out to build Sophie as the no-code test automation platform, we didn't think about building as a yet another no-code, yet another testing tool. We looked at the user experience and we said, look, we need to make the QA engineers or developers who are testing your product super, super efficient in doing what they do today, but do it faster, do it reliably, and do it at scale. And that's why we tell people that, hey, you can come to Sophie and under 10 seconds, you can get a physical device, a real device installed on your application, latest application, either through your CI/CD pipeline or others. And without knowing anything about how product is built, like writing code, because in order to create automation, you need to understand the coding, which is software engineering skills.
Yeah.
And you also need to understand what are the nuances between Android and iOS and how you're using the frameworks and under the hood elements. We abstract all of those.
Yeah.
And once you create those, you can run it at scales within hours. We tell people that if you use Sophie, you should get at least 10x productivity in your time to test your application. And that's what we take pride on, Look, if it's taking you days to test your software, you will get into hours using our platform, because we are not just creating automation. We are actually transforming your experience and removing all the repetitive manual tasks.
Yeah. I guess if I'm a tester, my question is this going to be something that replaces my job functionality? Or is it, and I guess if I'm a developer, it's another tool to kind of maybe not necessarily need that extra step? Or is it more of a tool for testers to do their job, or maybe even do more testing in a given time period and to test more products and really just to hyperscale the amount of features that are being tested from a certain product or a certain version of it, or different types of products that are being built under the company? Where does it fall within, I guess, its relationship to the testers and the people it affects the most?
Yeah, so we believe that we make a tester a co-tester.
Yeah.
It's not about replacing them. It's about really significantly enhancing the productivity. Because if you talk to any tester today, or a QA engineer or developer who's doing the testing again every day, they're frustrated. They're frustrated to do the same task every day. And our goal is to remove that frustration and really have a reliable solution that addresses their pain points. Right? And that's where we are kind of 100% focused on. And in order to do that, there are two key elements to it. Right? One is that today, if I have an application and I need to create an automation, or test it, I need to have a set of physical devices or emulators on Android or iOS. I need to have frameworks or APMs or tools that can go use it. Then I need to also use, if you need to do visual quality, if you need to do performance, and if you need to do the crash or reliability analysis, you need to use different tools as part of either the Android Studio or XCUnit, right? So what we have done is that we have brought all these things together as one. So instead of using 5-6 different tools to do that, we have aggregated that into a one seamless experience. And we take pride on that anybody in the world can come to Tofi.ai, sign up, and within the 60 minutes, they'll be able to create their top scenarios and be able to run it at scale.
Wow. It's incredible how quickly and how effectively the platform does. And I'm not a technical founder myself. So describe for me and others alike, what goes into building a no-code platform? And really what I'm talking about is how do you consider helping it communicate with multiple languages? Because I'm assuming if it's plugging into a certain system or with a certain developer, it's got to communicate with all different types of languages or different tech stacks. It's got to be able to be a little bit agnostic in that sense. And how much of, you know, the time you spent developing Sophie was spent on just helping it communicate with other languages and translate it into one platform? And what are the challenges that come with that?
Oh, yeah. It's very interesting. I this is a very fascinating thing. So in 2017-18 timeframe, we launched our product called the Sophie Bot, which was basically you can upload your application and Sophie can go and traverse it, find the issues and give you the result. It actually fell on our face. It was dead on arrival. And the reason it was dead on arrival was because underlying framework like Android and iOS was changing so fast that we were just keeping up to maintain that, right? Mm-hmm. So whatever you are building up on something, the problem with the abstraction layer is that how stable is the underlying framework makes a huge difference on this. Otherwise, you continue to chase the changes underneath, right?
Yeah.
So that's where our pattern comes into the picture. And that's why we didn't focus on just building an automation tool. We focused on the engineering productivity as it relates to quality assurance. And that's really important delineation, because as an example, it will take you half an hour to configure your environment every day. We do it under 10 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. So here you go. You have your half an hour back. You don't have to worry about it. Yeah, I need to get devices. I need to configure it. Similarly, developer, when a QA engineer reports an issue to the developer, they ask, hey, what are the steps to repro? Give me this data. Give me that data. We encapsulate right then and there at the real time so that the interaction between the finding the issues and solving and fixing the issue is very small and fast. And that's what really we have been focused on those aspects more so than anything else.
Yeah. It's fascinating how you kind of help solve a lot of different issues versus maybe one in particular. And was it during that experience that you saw the need, or did you have to go back and kind of brainstorm and workshop where was direction of the go, or was it a lot of it user feedback and and them letting you know maybe the valuable parts of the product and the invaluable parts that they're using the most. How's that process? Yeah. And how can other founders, I guess, kind of think about their feedback and make that switch in direction?
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. So when I left Microsoft, I thought I knew the engineering productivity, but pretty good. And you realize how much you don't know, right? And even if you're a founder and your area of expertise is that we are always have biases, right? Some people realize they have biases and some. So even if you're a technical founder and you have an area of expertise, it's very critical to continue to listen to the customer. Yeah. And that's what I think we have been successful in doing, it that even though we had some missteps, what we were thinking on it. But today, I mean, we have tested almost 30,000 plus applications. And we have like companies like Microsoft as our customers and others who have been using us. And that's really is like continue to focus on it and to focus on every sprint better than the previous one. Yeah. Well, very few companies kind of get successful in a short time. It's a marathon. You have to be constantly lifting and constantly improving on it. And once you get to a stage where you get to critical mass, now we are at a point where we constantly get the feedback from our existing customer. I need this, I need this, I need this. Yeah. So that really helps refine it.
Yeah, yeah. Tell the audience a little bit about the traction. How many users are using the platform now? How many from conception to now? What are you excited about in terms of the growth for Sophia?
We have over 2,500 companies users of us. We have around 30,000 applications that we have tested on our. We grew 4x last year. We are on track to grow 4x this year. We had a funding last year, which is a kind of super seed round that we did last August. Since then, we have grown almost 35% in terms of people. We are not laying off. We are hiring people. So if you're a great engineer and you're passionate about the no code, we'd love to talk. And we are hiring across the board. So and this year, in 2023, we expect to grow again the 4x because you see, it's a big problem, right?
Yeah.
It's a problem. People are releasing faster and it's very difficult to hire engineers. And if you want, and they are very expensive resources, right? And that's why our no code platform enables anybody in the team to test it faster, effectively, and efficiently and at scale.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit about what are some of the biggest challenges that Sophie faces today?
Quite a few. One of the challenges that we've always been focused on mobile apps, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we see that there is a demand where people want to have the no-code platform across the stack, mobile, web, API, all together, right? We have mobile and API, but people ask for more things. So we are finding is that to focus on our core thing and yet continue to innovate on the external area is one thing. The second thing that we find challenging every now and then is obviously you are aware when you're a no-code platform, underlying changes does make a difference, right? Especially the iOS part, privacy setting and things that changes, right? That impacts the no-code platforms like us, right? So we find that as kind of also the challenging, which is true for any no-code platform, because you're an abstraction layer on top of X number of systems. And the third thing I would say is that we are scaling. So scale has its own challenges, right? We are growing worldwide, and our customer base is also worldwide. So that entails that brings a different set of issues, both on the people, process, and infrastructure perspective that we are working on today.
Yeah. If everything goes well, what's the long-term vision for Sophie?
So we believe that engineering productivity is super, super critical. So we believe that, and in order to have, and the testing is one of the biggest impediments for faster efficiency or a faster product releases, right? Any engineering manager you ask, right? And as the product matures, your cost of engineering or cost of testing also goes up.
Yeah.
So we believe in the long term that, you know, we'd be in the kind of the unified no-code test automation platform across DevOps cycle, right? Mobile, web, API, right? All combined in a seamless and easier way. And how I see it that down the road, there are a lot of new advancement coming in a generative AI and those elements that can help even engineering productivity even higher. So that's what we are kind of focused on. And that's where we see the opportunity.
I love that. I always like this next section. I call it my founder FAQ. So I'm going to ask you some rapid fire questions. Then we'll see where we get. So first question is thinking about the Sophie platform, And no-code platforms in general, is there going to be a time where people get certified in Sophie and are able to use that as a way to maybe get into another position or know that a company is using a platform like that and almost specialize in using a platform and really that increased capability that come with it. Do you see a time where that's the case?
If you ask me, ideally, I prefer not to. Because the certification, if you look at all the certifications that came in, because the product was so complex, right? If you look at Cisco certification or Microsoft certification, because the product has so many variables and it requires a lot of training and things, we believe in order to take the engineering productivity and a no code, anybody should be able to do it.
Yeah.
Right? So, and that's why we have spent a lot of time on the user experience of it. Even if somebody has no coding experience and nothing, they should be able to go do that, right? So that's what my desire is. Obviously, just like any other tool, there is a cost of advancement, learning, and all those things. But right now, we don't have any plan for certification, but in future, maybe.
Yeah, I love that. Thinking about your business model and no codes in general, is it similar to a SaaS model where you charge per service, per access and per seat or something like that? Or is there another way that you are able to kind of work with the user to monetize on that experience? And has it always been the same?
Yeah, and actually, business model has evolved. I'll answer the second part first.
Sure.
We used to be user-based licensing, then we had the flat licensing, and now today we are usage-based licensing. So it's more of a step function. So if you are like our starting SKU is $549 and you'll get 2,500 minutes for your testing needs. So how we compute is just like you get machine. So just like you have a device and you get a device and you're testing on it, similarly, it's the compute time. So for us, monetization is the number of minutes that you use on our platform. And we don't care about either one user using it or 10 user using it. That's like a more usage-based.
Yeah, it's brilliant. What's particularly hard about your job?
My job as a CEO is to find the best person for the job. Mm-hmm. And that person may know more than me about that particular one. So how do I help that person grow, knowing the need? So for example, at Microsoft, I was running the engineering team and I had very familiarity with all these things, right? With engineering, I can still answer the engineering questions, right? But not the same in sales, marketing, business ops, and finance for that matter, right? But I think constantly learning and saying, okay, I every day I get to know, okay, I don't know this either. Okay, I need to do these things. And I scratch my head and I said, look, I have no idea. Because when you grow as a technical founder, you have to learn a lot. I'm hoping that we are hiring the best people to do the best job. So they can help me as well to learn that discipline better. And I feel that is not only the toughest part of my job, but it's also one of the best part of the job. Yeah. Because then you're surrounded by the people who are like, hey, you're really working together. Because as a company, we will not be successful as individual. We'll be successful as team.
Yeah. Thinking about talent and hiring the right people, where do you go to find the right people and what are some things you've used or some strategies you've used that and advice you can give other founders on how to vet the right talent or how to make sure that talent fits within the culture of the team?
So yeah, so I think it really depends on what type of talent you are hiring, right? Mm-hmm. What we have done is that, for example, as a company, we decided that our leadership team will continue to be based out of Seattle because the leadership needs to be in sync. Then it's easier to distill the information. We have most of our development resources offshore, and most of our sales and marketing is onshore in US primarily, right? So we have kind of done where we can find the right talent, as the last 2-3 years has been very expensive resources to hire. And right now we are in a mode that wherever and anywhere we can find a great resource, we'll hire. Obviously, we are very cost cognizant and cost conscious about what's the return on investment on these people. And we are seeing is that some type of work, you can do it very easily offshore. But some type of work, you cannot do offshore. And you need to have the right people. So we kind of constantly balance that part.
Yeah. What's one thing that you do more as a function of your job that you didn't expect to earlier on as a founder?
I think it's like when I started, I always see myself as focused like 60, 70 or 80% of my time on product, right? You're building, because that's what you're ingrained as. And if you're a software engineer or an engineer, you're in the mode of building. You're not in the mode of thinking about telling your story, why you are doing it and convince the customer and how do you explain in a seamless, easy way for people to consume the data, right? You're very hardcore about engineering. About explain. So I always get excited when I talk about the product implementation, today I don't talk about product implementation. I talk about the benefit of the user. Why we are in the first place and who is benefiting and what the ROI looks like, because technology keeps on changing, right? Mm-hmm. As the last 20, 30 years, and even on my career in the 20 plus years, every few years, there's a new thing to worry about, right?
Yeah.
So it's not about the technology, it's the value that you are creating, not just for the customers that you have, but for the ecosystem in general.
Yeah, yeah. If you had a magic wand, what's one thing that you'd wish your company to have right now or have more of right now, rather than wait for it or not have it in the near future?
Oh, So I think it's the customer base that we want, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's if I had it, we'll have thousands and thousands of customer base. I think that's where we are shooting for, right? To get to the future, and I think we believe the opportunity is there, and we have some great product out there, and that's what our goal is. And I wish I had that magic one, but that's how it works.
Yeah, yeah. I like to ask that question to see what founders' current priorities are, because at any given time, it's fundraising building product or retiring people, right? It shifts as the market goes. But
Somebody, one of my investors actually gave this example that I really resonated with, is that the early stage companies like a balloon, right? You press one side and something else pop up. You close that and something else pop up. So you're totally right. If you ask me the same question in next quarter, I may have a different answer.
Yeah, exactly. I always like to ask this question because I think founders are so amazing in where they get information, but how they extract information, whether it's early in your career or now. What books or people have influenced you the most?
I think one of the book that I actually recommend people to read is actually both 0 to 1 by Ben Horowitz. And the second one is Hard Thing About Hard Things is by Peter Thiel. Both are really helps you understand, especially the better book, which talks about that as the company is growing, everybody needs to look at, are they the right person at the right place? Because you're growing from 0 to 1 million is different requirement. 1 to 10 million is different requirement. 10 to 30 is different requirement, right? And that's why everybody needs to see that, hey, how we are kind of fitting into that model and scaling. And as the company scale, both of these books really helps kind of think through it. I think it's a great read for any founder.
Yeah, yeah. Those two books have almost become gospel for a lot of founders. And like you said, it really encapsulates a lot of the experience. And one thing, and it's been a pleasure that I've been able to witness on the podcast, is a lot of founders, whether see the same problems, but in different versions of them, have to go through similar milestones or similar bumps in the road along the building process. The more insight you get into that and how you're able to prepare yourself, I think is extremely indicative of the future success that you might have. I know we're coming to the close of the episode here, Syed, and so I want to give you a chance to give us your plugs, essentially let us know where we can find you, where we can support Sophie, and where we can support you as a founder. Give us your LinkedIn, your website. Where can the audience get involved with the product?
Yep. I think if you're building any mobile apps, and go to Sophie.ai, sign up and try out on your own. I think that's where the beauty of SaaS is that you get the real-time feedback from the people and give us feedback. My alias is Syed at Sophie.ai, and any feedback, anything that you wanted to hear. And also, especially for founders, right? It's a pretty lonely and a stressful journey. Okay. So if you're building something and you want to just talk about it, I'm more than available LinkedIn or just email, and anything that you want to talk about I can definitely allocate time to do it, because that's what other people did to me, right? A lot of my previous managers and other founders have taken the time and do it and learn from their experience. So I told somebody that, hey, I should write a book on the failures because I made so many mistakes, right? So I think, and the advantage of making so many mistakes is that I can tell people, hey, this is the mistake I made, and you can learn from it.
Amazing. Syed, that's so generous of you. And you're right. You know, a lot of founders say that the founder journey is very lonely in a lot of times, but connecting with other founders is honestly why I do this show a lot, is really to create the community around the experience. And we all kind of go through similar things, but different. And even though we don't start talking about founding and startups and what we're doing right now, the conversation goes to there. But Syed, it's been such an incredible time, not only learning from your background, your experience at Microsoft, and how you kind of view and have experienced the development process, but also the evolution and the newness of a lot of the development process, and how Sophie has a really strong place in helping testers become not only super testers, but you know, the whole production process that much more efficient and effective. So I really appreciate you being on the show, and I hope you enjoyed yourself, and thank you again for being on Behind Company Lines.
No, great. Thank you again for having me. It was a pleasure. I really enjoyed it. It's great. And wish all the other founders who are listening or thinking about it.